I am now joined by Thomas Petterfee, founder and chairman of Interactive Brokers, who is one of the world's premier brokerage firms and trading platforms. In a nutshell, they provide automated trade execution and custody of securities, commodities, foreign exchange in over 135 markets around the globe. They typically work with sophisticated individual investors, hedge funds, prop traders, financial advisors, and simply put, there are few, if any, who better understand market structure and this entire topic of payment for order flow than Thomas, who's now on the line with me. Thomas, it's a pleasure. Thank you for taking the time.
It's a very kind introduction. Thank you.
Okay, so look, I know you've been talking about payment for order flow for literally decades, but this is a topic that's still new to many. And I'll tell you from my perspective, I have found this area incredibly difficult to get straight answers on. There seems to be a lot of controversy and misunderstanding around this. It's a polarizing topic. And so my hope is that you can shed some light on this and explain what's really going on behind the scenes. Now, before we do that, I thought it'd be helpful to start by just discussing the basic brokerage business model, because that clearly plays into why payment for order flow exists and some of the motivations here. And so I'll set the table like this. There are several ways brokerages make money besides payment for order flow. There's charging commissions, which obviously those are going away for many brokers, which is why we're talking about this. There's also net interest, which is where brokers pay, say, 25 basis points on client cash and then invest that cash for their own benefit at 2% or whatever, pocketing the difference. There's securities lending revenue, charging for margin. Some brokers sell branded investment products like mutual funds and ETFs. Some offer investment advice. To begin, from your perspective, how do you think about these various revenue streams and how they factor into the type of client experience you want to deliver?
So as far as different revenue streams are concerned, their importance varies by broker. At Interactive Brokers, the most important revenue is commissions. Even though people who want to have zero commissions can get zero commissions. But all brokers charge commissions on option trades, and these are becoming even more popular. So in other words, some brokers offer zero commissions on stocks. We also offer zero commissions on stocks, but the difference is that on zero commission orders, all brokers sell the customer's orders to high-frequency traders. With many brokers, you don't have a choice. They just charge zero commissions and sell your orders. With Interactive Brokers, you have a choice. You can pick zero commissions and we'll sell your orders, or you can pay a small commission and we execute your order. We try to find another side for your order at a better price.
Okay, so to your point, go ahead.
Yeah, so interest income is another revenue source, of course. At the moment, interest rates are near zero, so it's not as important. But an important component of interest income is short interest. And so when a client wants to sell short, he has to borrow the stock. And when the stock is difficult to borrow, there would be high interest on it. This is the case, for example, on meme stocks like AMC and GameStop, where there is a high short interest, so the stocks are difficult to find, to borrow, and then there's a high interest rate on them. So at Interactive Brokers, we share the interest with the clients 50-50 when the client agrees that we can lend out their fully paid stocks and, of course, guarantee the return of the shares. Many brokers also charge a custody fee from 5 to 25 basis points. We do not charge such a fee. Then there are, of course, proprietary products from which brokers earn fees. at IBKR, we long ago decided that we'll have no such products because they inevitably lead to conflict of interest sooner or later.
So obviously there are a lot of different business models here. Brokers can take a wide variety of approaches. Let's get to this topic of payment for order flow and exactly where that fits. Because from my perspective, we had the launch of Robinhood in 2015. They came right out of the gate offering commission-free trading. And then in 2019, we saw most of the major brokerages follow suit. And I think that really began to magnify this entire discussion around how brokerages make money, which ultimately that led to this topic of payment for order flow. Now, payment for order flow isn't new, right? This isn't some new innovation that Robinhood concocted. Do you want to talk a little bit about the history of payment for order flow and perhaps explain exactly what payment for order flow is? What happens when an investor or advisor hits the buy button online at whatever brokerage you're using?
Right. So let me start with a bit of background. When I went to trade on the American Stock Exchange, I became a market maker, and that was in 1977. That was 44 years ago. A market maker is supposed to provide liquidity, continuously buy and sell for his own account. So I started out as a computer programmer, and my idea was to automate trading, so I quickly wrote a computer program to provide buy and sell orders and hired many people to work on the different exchange floors to work with me to execute orders. By the year 2000, we were the largest market-making firm in the world since we were connected to all the electronic exchanges in Europe and Asia. Interactive Brokers, the brokerage firm that we started in 93, was growing slowly on the side. After the 2009 market crash, several other firms went into the automated market making business and started to buy order flow from retail brokers and paid them to execute their orders. But actually, even before that, it was Bernie Madoff who first started to buy orders from other brokers and execute those orders. He used that to shield his Ponzi scheme. This practice of buying order flow became more widespread. Fewer and fewer orders came to the exchanges, and it became difficult for us as market makers on the exchanges to earn a living. We did not want to also buy orders or trade against our customers because we didn't like the conflict of interest. The conflict is very clear. The worst price the market maker gives to the retail order, the more money he earns. So we decided to sell the market-making business, and we remain a pure broker today. So that's basically... Now, the question is, what is the obligation of the market maker receiving the order? There are several exchanges in the USA today, and they all trade the same stock. On each exchange, there is the highest bid or buy price, and the lowest bid or offer or sale price. I'm sorry, a lowest offer or sales price. This is called the best bid and offer, or BBO. When you take the highest bid from all the exchanges and the lowest offer from all the exchanges, that is called the national best bid and offer, or NBBO. So the SEC, or Securities Exchange Commission, that regulates securities trading in the country, has a rule that all stock trades have to be at a price that is at or inside the NBBO. So when a market maker executes an order, the execution must be inside the NBBO.
So let me ask you this. If that's the case from the market maker's perspective, someone like Citadel or Virtu, what is their motivation here? Why do they want this order flow?
So the NBBO is rather wide. As a result, fewer and fewer orders compete with each other on the exchanges. It gets wider and wider. So when a market maker executes an order, it turns a profit. So the market maker will buy just slightly inside the NBBO, namely slightly above the bid, and he will sell just very, very slightly under the offer.
Okay, well, and I guess...
So market makers currently pay something of between 25 and 35% of the net of the profit to the brokers. So the market maker makes $10 on a trade, he pays $3 to the broker. So the broker basically still gets his commission, but it's called payment for order flow.
Well, let's just boil this down then. In your opinion, is the practice of payment for order flow good or bad for investors?
Well, it depends on how you look at it. So compared to executing the order right at the NBBO, the customer saves a tiny bit because, as I said, the high-frequency trader or market maker will give a slightly better price for the order. But the fact is that there are even better prices at which and other places with better prices where orders can be executed. There are so-called dark pools where prices are not shown, where orders can be executed relative to the NBBO. For example, we at IBKR have a dark pool where we get institutional orders. We explain to the institutions that, look, we have all these retail order flow coming in. Why don't you put your buy and sell orders into our dark pool relative to whatever the NBBO happens to be, and we will just execute against you. So with these kinds of arrangements, we achieve a situation where the retail order is executed against the institutional order right at the middle of the NBBO. So both sides benefit. Relative to that, it is not good for a payment for order flow. It's not good for a customer.
Is there any way to quantify the cost here? Because not to pick on Robinhood, but I went to their website yesterday and they show that over 95% of their orders are executed at the national best bid and offer or better. And for every 100 shares traded, they state that they save customers $1.09 on average. And if investors see data like this, you know, that looks pretty good. That doesn't seem like a problem. How do we gauge the true cost or impact here?
So as I said, so if Robinhood gets a dollar, Robinhood gets a high payment because their orders are really not very smart. So I would think that the average customer of Robinhood loses $4 on execution, and the Robinhood gets $1.09 of that $4.
What about from an investor behavior perspective? Do you think the practice of payment for order flow ultimately encourages more trading, which then that could be detrimental to investors?
So, well, I mean, you know, any business is motivated to encourage customers to do more, right? So we all want to sell more of our goods and services. So, of course, brokers want to encourage their customers to trade more.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So, on the long run, I would think that I would think that frequent trading is not very good unless somebody is. That's what they do for a living and really know how to do it. So there are people who can trade for a living. Like I, as a market maker, when on the exchange floor, I was making a living trading. But that's, you know, that you have to be very, very devoted to it and really focus on it. And I don't recommend for people to do that. What I recommend is people should do serious research. So on all these brokerage platforms, there is an awful lot of data on which people can do very, very serious research, become an expert at a certain industry that for some reason somebody may be already familiar with. Look at all the companies in that industry and figure out which is the best value available among those companies and which is the worst. And the way I used to make money and still do sometimes is I buy the best and short the worst. And you know, I increase the position as the two prices go apart and decrease it as they come together.
Thomas, just a couple minutes left here. Everything we've covered aside, can we say the industry has at least taken a small step forward over the past few years and that it used to be investors paid trading commissions and had their orders routed for payment, whereas now at least the commissions are gone from a lot of brokerages. Is that progress?
Well, generally, electronification in the business is a huge progress because, let's face it, so in 20 years ago, even Schwab was charging $30 commission, so on a stock trade. So today they charge zero, and maybe the customer still loses about $5 or $6 on a trade. So it's $6 versus $30. So there is certainly progress. And that is the reason why trading volumes keep increasing and trading is becoming more popular. And I think that's a good thing because I like an economy in which many, many people participate by doing their research on providers of the goods and services that people use.
And before I let you go, anything that you think should happen from a regulatory perspective regarding payment for order flow, whether the SEC or whomever, should changes be made, or does this all come down to relying on education and sort of the free market working this all out?
So I spoke to Chairman Gensler on this, SEC Chairman Gensler on this issue, and he explained that he felt that he really had to do something about this situation. But I think it is very difficult to do anything because payment for order flow has always been, it has been the practice for 100 years on Wall Street with one big exception, namely with conventional brokerage firms like Goldman Sachs or Citibank or UBS or JP Morgan. There's a sales department and there's a trading department. So the sales department gets in the customer order, sends it to the trading department. The trading department executes the order and sends it back to the sales department to notify the customer. In other words, they internalize that they trade against the customer order also. But since it's all inside one firm, there is not an overt payment being made. So So if the SEC were to prohibit payment for order flow, the practice of payment for order flow, what would happen is that the market makers would merge with the brokers, and it would all come into one firm, and then what will the SEC do? So it's either overt or it's not overt, and it's when it's hidden, then people are not aware of it, and everybody's happy.
Well, Thomas, we're going to have to leave it there. Greatly enjoy the conversation this week. Again, I really appreciate your time. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me.
That was Thomas Petterfy, founder and chairman of Interactive Brokers.